You're listening to the RedCafe.net podcast.
Coming up in this week's RedCafe.net podcast, we take a look at the final Premier League game of the season against Blackpool. We also have a special guest to help us dissect the FA Youth Cup victory over Sheffield United. And we have another guest to help us preview the Champions League final on Saturday.
Welcome to the RedCafe.net podcast. You can email us at podcast@redcafe.net or alternatively, post your opinion on the RedCafe.net forums.
Well, hello and welcome to episode 83 of the RedCafe.net podcast. It's the Champions League final preview edition, and I'm joined by Dan and Dov. As is always the case, guys, how are you this week?
Very well, thanks, Mr. Darwin. I'm very well. Just immensely nervous about Saturday's game. Now I keep thinking about it when I shouldn't do. And it's just trying to guess Fergie's team lineup and stuff. But there's no point guessing; we're not going to get it right, I don't suppose. But I'm very excited, and just hope we can cap off a great week. Really, with what we've collected the trophy on Sunday and then Neville's testimonial on Tuesday, that we just cap it all off.
Good stuff, Dov. How are you doing this week?
I'm very well. Had a pizza this week. I've just had one about half an hour ago as well. And I went to Rome at the weekend. And well, I caught Survival Sunday, which was exciting, to say the least. And had a lovely, lovely train journey down there. You'll love this. This is what living in Italy is like on occasion, right? So you get the train down to Rome. You get about 30 minutes outside of Italy's capital city, right? The train stops at a train station. And then they announce, right, wait a minute, the locomotive thing that pulls the train, something's wrong with it, give us 10 minutes, we're going to fix it, and then we'll get on our way. So 10 minutes passes, and then another announcement goes, yeah, this locomotive's completely knackered, we need to change it, we'll get a new one, 15 minutes, and we'll be on our way. So, what is it, half an hour passes, it gets to 7:59 p.m, and then an announcement comes on the speaker thing, and they're just like, yeah, this train's no longer going to Rome. This train stopped. It's broke. It's not going to work. But there's another train leaving from platform 2 that's going to Rome, and it leaves at 8:01. So get off the train and go on that one. So everybody gathers their things together really quickly, and the lovely people that work on the trains locked all the doors for the train so nobody could get out. So, yeah, that was quite fun. But they were very nice. They ended up delaying the other train so we could all get on, and that ended up leaving about half an hour after it was supposed to as well. So yeah, my exciting trip down to Rome ended up being 2 hours late. So other than that, it's just been a normal weekend watching football and eating pizza, Steve.
So don't travel on a train if ever you're in Italy. Is that the motto of that story?
Well, normally I've never had any problems, so I'll be honest. It's maybe only this, like once or twice I've had delayed issues. But I would maybe say if you are planning on getting on a train, go on the one before you would normally get, just in case.
I'll bear that in mind, Dov, when I move to Italy in the future. Good stuff. Right then, well, we'll get started then, back onto United, and obviously start with the victory over Blackpool on the last day of the season, the 4-2 win on Sunday. I was actually working at the time, and Dov alluded to it there, Survival Sunday. It was crazy, wasn't it? Some of the way it was all changing every minute. But no, in terms of United, it was a decent game to watch, wasn't it? And obviously good to get the win in the end.
Yeah, I mean, there were points on the game on Sunday where even United fans were willing on Blackpool to score. When they first scored the first goal, it was a bit like, oh, you know, well done, good free kick. But the second one, people were actually getting up on the feet, clapping. It was a bit weird, really. Not quite sure why, but
title was in the bag, wasn't it? So
yeah, it was a more relaxed occasion. United weren't worrying about anything result-wise or anything like that. But no, it was a good game, entertaining game, 4-2, and Blackpool played the part. I thought that United played well in parts, especially like the last 20 minutes or so. They played really well, but you know, for the for the rest of the game. Blackpool played really well, and they deserve to go in front just after half time as well.
Dob, in terms of individual performances, I mean, I asked you this sort of question last week, but is there anyone you think that's really sort of made a state their claim to maybe not start in the final, but at least sort of earn a place on the bench and maybe impact sub in the second half? Or?
I think maybe that Raphael getting a run out was maybe trying to see how his fitness is and try to get him into condition, because I think that right back slot is probably the one that's up for grabs out of the lot of them. So I think he had a reasonable game, but he did come off at half time due to injury. So whether or not he'll make it in time for Saturday remains to be seen. Darren Fletcher as well, another one trying to get his fitness up to see if he'll make it for Saturday. Apparently, here's one. Like, obviously, a lot of people are saying he's not fit enough, but apparently he ran 13 kilometres against Blackpool, which was, I think, more than any other player or any other United player. So it might be fully rehabilitated from, obviously, that virus, but it looked a wee bit skinny than he normally does.
Just to clip in here, I mean, he looked fit enough in terms of running, but his actual sharpness didn't look right. He was chasing around Charlie Adam for most of the game. And David Vaughan, he was always like a yard off him, you know what I mean? His passing ability was quite good. He showed some good range as well. He was trying some switch passes and whatnot, and they were coming off. But I think it's in terms of his reading the game seems to have gone a little bit, you know, just we've not playing for a while. And
yeah,
I think if we threw him in against Barcelona, I think that they'd obviously exploit that.
Yeah, no, I think that as well. Like, obviously he's trying to get his fitness up generally, but I don't think he'll start against Barcelona.
Well, he didn't play any part in the testimony either, which is you'd have expected him to play a few minutes in that at least, you know. And he didn't play in that at all.
Yeah.
Which is disappointing, really, because he obviously missed the... was he on the bench for the 08 final? He didn't start, did he? And he missed out the 09 one because of suspension. And it'd be really unfortunate. I don't know if Fergie risked putting him on the bench, but I don't know what he'd contribute if we were losing, if you know what I mean.
Dan, do you think Ferguson sort of had his team in mind for the final even before the Blackpool game? Do you think if someone had come out and been outstanding against Blackpool, do you think that would have changed his mind maybe, or do you think he was already sort of sure of the 11?
I reckon he's probably, you know, he's always prepared for these sort of occasions, isn't he? He always thinks a few games ahead anyway. I think maybe 9 out of the 11 were in place. I think, like Dov said, you know, the right back position is one that's possibly up for grabs. It could be O'Shea, it could be Fabio, it could be Raphael. But I think it depends how he plays, you know, in midfield, if he plays three centrally or if he plays two or what, really. I thought Anderson played really, really well against Blackpool. He's starting to score goals now as well, which is good. But I thought his all-round game was good. He was, you know, tracking back, he was getting stuck in, his passing was good. He looked like he had more energy than what he usually show sometimes, and I think he played really well. So if Berbatov had scored some of the chances he had as well, he might have been in the starting lineup. But I think the fact that he omitted Hernandez would suggest that he's going to start, and Valencia didn't play at the weekend, did he?
Dan's been Facebooking away.
Certainly have, yeah, I have.
So, he only got Twitter last week, Steve, and he decided to go Facebook crazy. It makes no sense.
Social network king now is Dan, he loves it. But yeah, Dov, end of the season, obviously. The margin as well, ahead of Chelsea and City in the end, it was 9 points. I mean, I read somewhere it was the biggest margin for something like 10 years between the sort of top two. So when you consider what a couple of weeks ago we were all saying, oh, Chelsea are coming up full steam ahead, it's going to be really close. And in the end, it's been quite a margin.
Yeah, and I think that's just testament to our home form, the consistency we've shown at home. I think there's also a statistic that said it's the worst away record since like the 1977-79 league winners, whoever they were, for away form. So our home form's been amazing all season. Dropped, what, 2 points during the whole season. The thing is as well, City, who came third, were joint second as well. I mean, I find that quite ominous. That team who, well, they're probably going to be our biggest rivals next season when they spend about £5 billion in the summer. But we're there, we're always there, thereabouts, and I think with a few reinforcements, then I can't see any reason why we won't be challenging next season. But it's just a fantastic feeling, and seeing all the guys on the pitch, and Fergie's loving it, all the players loving it, Giggsy was there with his kids, an unnamed Premiership footballer was there with his kids. And just a great occasion, I think.
Well, a few days after the Blackpool win, guys, we had the Gary Neville's testimonial, 2-1 defeat to Juventus. But obviously, that wasn't the result, wasn't what it was all about. It was a fitting send-off, wasn't it, for Mr. Neville? And Dan, you were there, so you could probably describe it a bit better than I can. But great to see the likes of Beckham, Phil Neville putting on the red shirt again.
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, you know, Neville's been a loyal servant to the club, you know, for the past sort of 17, 18 years, and he's been a really good player for us, really, over those years. You know, a lot of people underrate him, but I think he got a bit overshadowed by the fact that Beckham returned. There's a lot of people there, I think, just for Beckham, really, to see him in a United shirt again, like you mentioned. But you know, it was a good game. Not a lot happened in it, really. It was very pedestrian, but. Yeah, there was 41,000 people there, so Beckham got quite a good. I'm getting carried away now. Neville got quite a good send off.
That's terrible, Dan. I think as well, you'll notice the. I don't know if you stood up and clapped, but Del Piero got a nice standing ovation as well, which is great to see. I thought.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I've always appreciated him. He's a very good player. He's there, Ryan Giggs, isn't he? And he's been fantastic, really. I mean, he must be about 36, 37 now, and he's played well this season in parts, and you know, he didn't really do much on Tuesday, but like I say, it was just a walkabout really for them, and you know, all 41,000 stood up and clapped him off.
And what about the picture? I think it's on the Facebook group of it was a now and then of the class of 92, and then the class of 92 as it is now. It was minus one player. I didn't notice, but it was you, Dan. You told me that Terry Cook had been chopped off the end of the old photo, and he must be quite annoyed. It's why was he not there? It was terrible.
I don't know. I don't think he was obviously not as good a player, but. He was on the end. I think he was next to Paul Scholes on it, and it's just, yeah, he didn't get a call back to play, did he?
I should have just phoned him up for the boat. He just said, come and stand on the end of the line.
You're listening to the redcafe.net podcast.
Well, it's reserves review time now then, and we've got a couple of games to look back at, and Dov, I'll hand over to you now.
Thanks very much, Steve. Well, like you say, we've got a special guest that's Nick from United Youth. Nick, welcome to the show.
Hi again.
It's been a wee while since we had you on, but since then we've had reams of success, won the Premier League, the reserves doing quite well there, and they played in the Lancashire Senior Cup on Friday against Blackburn, but only managed to get a 1-0 defeat. Osawe in the 59th minute scored for Blackburn, which meant that the reserves won't be getting their hands on the Senior Cup. I mean, were you at that game at all, Nick?
No, that one's actually, they held that Carrington behind closed doors for some reason, but apparently it was very similar to the reserve playoff they'd had against Blackburn the week before. They saw United dominated but just couldn't score and got picked off on their counter-attack, and then Blackburn just defended really well, so it was a bit of a low way to finish the season, but after winning the Manchester Senior Cup the week before, it's not too bad.
Yeah, it's not too bad. But the real reason we've got you on is to talk about the FA Youth Cup winning side. Obviously, the first leg was a 2-2 draw, but this one was a very, very one-sided affair. A 4-1 victory against Sheffield United at Old Trafford, with Ravel Morrison and Will Keane both bagging braces in a two. Well, Morrison had a superb game as well. And Will Keane... and amongst the goals again. So, Nick, what was your take on that one?
I thought the second game, it was a bit scrappy to start off with, but I think we eventually, I think it was just the first goal settled us down, and Sheffield United just, I wouldn't say they fell apart, but they never looked really like they could get back into after that, and we went to town them a bit in the second half, and Morrison was fantastic. Keane took his goals really well. And there were some great performances at the back particularly as well. Tom Thorpe was great over both legs, I thought.
We've been talking about, obviously, Will Keane. He pops up every week pretty much with his goals for the youth team and the reserves. I mean, is this guy the real deal? Is he going to be sort of the one to come through? Obviously, potentially going to have competition from what Welbeck, Makeda next season. But do you think he's got that little bit extra to maybe push ahead of them, or is it going to take a bit more time?
I think you're going to have to be patient with him. He still lacks the sort of physique to play senior football regularly, I think. But, I mean, players tend to shoot up over the summer. It might be that he comes back in August and he's bulked up massively and he's in contention, but he's very good technically. He's probably one of the best finishers at the club already. So he's definitely got a chance. Whether he's quite got enough about him to make it to the first team with all the competition he's got, sort of in terms of other young strikers, I'm not 100% sure, but he'll have a good career somewhere, I'd say that definitely.
What did you make of Jesse Lingard's performance in the second leg there? Because I thought he was, for me, he was one of the standout performers along with Morrison and Will Keane as well. I thought he played on the right side, I think, for most of the game, and I thought a couple of excellent crosses, he came in and was always sort of willing to get up and down that right side. So he was another one. I think he's had quite a good season as well.
Yeah, it's the same in the semi-final as well. He put in a couple of good crosses against Chelsea for goals there. He probably wouldn't have played in the final if Lionel Cole had been fit, but he did very well. Both those two have been sort of real fixtures in the academy side all this season. So some of the more noted stars have played in the reserves or they've been away on international duty, and it's Lingard and Cole who've kept the team going on. And they're both very slight players, both tiny, but they're the sort of players that United love giving a chance to, and it's great to see him it really paying off and performing well.
And what of Ravel Morrison? He got his two goals, another fantastic performance. He was being in trouble this week. He got a £600 fine for throwing his girlfriend's mobile phone out the window of his car.
As you do.
That's what everybody does, I think. It's just one of if she's, was she reading text? I don't know what she was doing. She was doing something, but he seems to be one of these guys. He seems to be in trouble quite a lot, right? And obviously we had the whole court case with him before. Do you think that at some point the patience is just going to run out, or do you think that what do you think needs done with him essentially? Do you think he needs really somebody like Fergie to properly take him and get his head right, or do you think he's just one of these players that's a bit of a wild child and that's never going to really be taken out of his personality? It's part of who he is.
There's definitely sort of long-term issues there, I think, coming from his background, his upbringing. I think it's well documented that he's had quite a troubled upbringing. Sort of, he's moved around sort of his family members. He doesn't live with his mum at the minute. He lives with his grandparents, I think. But, I mean, by all accounts, seem to be improving slowly but steadily with him. I mean, obviously, this latest issue isn't great, but it was blown out of proportion. There was lots of talk about assault, but that charge was obviously dropped. I think he's moved in with Joshua King this season, and hopefully, I mean, Joshua King's meant to be sort of a model professional, so hopefully that will help. And there was a statement read out in court, I believe, this week that the club was saying, I mean, obviously they're going to dress it up nicely to hope he gets off, but they were saying how things have improved a lot lately, how he's cooperating, his behaviour's generally improved. So, like you say, I think if Fergie can't sort him out, then you wonder who can in football, really.
I was at the testimony on Tuesday, and obviously Scott Wooten came on in the last sort of 5-10 minutes, and you know, you mentioned it about Will Keane's, you know, physical appearance. I think that Wooten looks like a big, strong lad, and he's only a young boy as well. I mean, do you think he's got a future at United, or was it just one to give him a bit of experience to, you know, just get him involved with the first team, or where do you think it's going to go from here?
I'd be surprised if he's long-term got a future at United, just when you look, you've got Evans, Smalling, and you've got this new French kid, Raphael Varane, who's meant to be coming in. So obviously, it's a struggle for any really young central defender to make their mark now. But he's had a terrific season. He was my vote for Reserve Player of the Year. And I mean, can't really argue with Oliver Gill getting it, but he would have been a very good winner as well. And yeah, I think there was an element of just rewarding him for that good season. And like you say, physically, I don't think there's any issues there. He went to Tranmere in League One, and by all accounts sort of competed well there. Didn't look out of place slightly, and they'd love to have kept him, I think. So I think he's another one, if he'd have a very good career, and probably in the Football League. Maybe he can make the Prem, but I don't think he's a United player.
Okay, and obviously Paul Pogba's been pretty good this season as well. Same sort of question, really. Do you think he'll make it? Because, I mean, he's one of these players that, by all accounts, is compared to, you know, the likes of Patrick Vieira and all this, but I've not seen that so much in his game. I think he's a bit more skillful and a bit more powerful than what Vieira was. I'm just wondering, you know, United, it's been said a few times again this season, you know, that in midfield they lack a dominant player, you know, who can win the ball back and impose his physical nature on the game. I'm just wondering whether it's time for him now to maybe step up into, you know, a pre-season tour and see how he gets along.
I mean, if I had to put money on one of the sort of the Youth Cup team coming through, it would probably be him, just in terms of his ability. I think temperament, he's a little bit of maturing to do still, but I think he's professional, he's hardworking, and he's on the right path. Whether he's ready to step up now, I think he might just be a little bit behind sort of Ryan Tunnicliffe in his development, and It's a shame almost that there's not a World Cup or European Championships this year, because you'd imagine there'll be a full-strength squad going to America on pre-season and there might not be places for all the kids, whereas otherwise there might have been. But I'd love to see him involved in Carling Cup perhaps next season. And like I said, I think I'd be very surprised if he didn't make it at a very high level, hopefully with us. Just he's a, like you said, the Vieira comparisons, they're very they're obviously easy to come to just looking at him physically, and his manner of running is sort of quite long, leggy style, but he's a very different player, more creative, much more flair to him, and sort of much more of an attacking midfielder, really.
If I just jump in, what about the goalkeeper situation, Nick? Obviously, a lot of room as well, a lot of talk about David De Gea. Looks like he's going to be coming in the summer. I don't know if you've got an opinion on him, firstly, and also sort of, is there anyone in the sort of youth team that's coming through goalkeeper-wise? I mean, there's Ben Amos in the reserves, I suppose he's on the fringes. Could you see him being more of a part of the first team next season as well?
On De Gea, I've seen a little bit of him, not too much, only sort of the amount you can see on Sky Sports, really. I quite like the look of him. I think the comparisons with Van der Sar that have been made about him are quite encouraging. He does seem to have the right sort of temperament and mentality to, when he's sort of breaking into a team which is quite a volatile team, like Atletico Madrid, at 20 years old, is pretty impressive. And by all accounts, he's sort of handled that pretty well, and he's very highly thought of there. Obviously, him coming in, being only 20, I'm a big fan of Ben Amos. I think he's a very talented keeper, but De Gea is going to come in and obviously be first choice. So Amos is a year older than him, so you can't help thinking maybe he might see that as a cue to move on if he's going to get regular football anywhere. But obviously, if Cushack and Van der Sar leave, United will probably want him to be number three next season, so there's a tricky decision to be made there. As for lower down the ranks, Sam Johnston has come on absolute leaps and bounds this season. I think a lot of us were concerned in the first half of the season that he was stagnating a bit, even going backwards. He was making lots of mistakes, but he's been one of the academy's best players. Over the second half of the season, he's been brilliant in the Youth Cup run. He's made some fantastic saves, just generally been competent and sort of really performed solidly the whole way through. So it'd be interesting to see how he develops. I know he's played a lot for England youth teams, so he's very highly thought of by them. And he'll step up to the reserves next season. Hopefully he'll continue to progress.
Yeah, and Nick, I want to move up to the reserves if we can. We had an email, and I forgot who sent the email in, but it was a couple of weeks ago about David Petrucci. Obviously, he's been out for a long time with injury. I think he missed the whole season through injury, and he's kind of just getting back into sort of the reserve team picture a little bit. He got his first goal in a game against Blackburn a couple of weeks ago as well, and he actually there was an interview with him saying he's feeling better and better each time he's playing. I mean, he's one that, how far do you think he's going to go? Do you think he's going to be a little bit of a sort of very good sort of reserve team player? Maybe some comparisons with Giuseppe Rossi, like in the reserve team, scoring buckloads of goals, playing well, but not really getting that chance in the first team, which reserve performances maybe would suggest he should get eventually, and then being shipped back to Italy or Spain in the future. What do you think his future holds?
Obviously, a lot of it depends on if he can stay fit. Just after 2 years out, everyone was quite sort of tentative seeing how he would come back, and it's been really encouraging to see how he's come back from this injury. He's played in, I think, every game bar one since he came back, sort of February time. He's made 13 appearances, scored a couple of goals, got a couple of starts and full 90 minutes under his belt towards the end of the season, and the way he's been playing has been really encouraging. He's not really missed a beat, even after 2 years out, which is brilliant. He plays the sort of position that we could definitely use in the first team squad. Obviously Rooney's now playing a lot deeper behind Hernandez in the first team, so Petrucci would probably be competing with him. He plays in that same sort of role, just behind the front man. But he's someone I would definitely like to see go on the pre-season tour if he has a good pre-season, sort of start to pre-season with, in terms of fitness, just because his quality is absolutely fantastic, and he's physically, he's fine, he competes fine. I don't think there's any issues there, and he's a big favourite of mine, I have to admit. I just love watching him play, and it might well be that he ends up back in Italy. I mean, if he doesn't get the chances here, which wouldn't be that surprising, just because there's so many different midfielders at the club who are trying to break through, and we might add a couple more this season as well. But like I say, I really hope he gets a chance next season, and I think he's a sort of kid, if he does get the chance, there's a very good chance he'd take it.
And before we let you go, Nick, there's quite a big game happening at the weekend. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's the Champions League final. We are playing Barcelona.
Yeah, heard a little bit about that, yeah.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts on it? How do you think we'll do? How do you think we'll cope? What do you think will happen?
I mean, I have no real logical reason to back it up, but I've got a hunch that we will win it. Like I say, I can't really say we'll win it because of this, because of that. Just sort of lots of omens. There's so many omens going our way. I think we'll definitely sort of make a better, and we'll play a lot better than we did in 2009, give a much better account of ourselves. Just a few things that make me just think, oh, I think we'll just pinch this, even though it does seem like Barcelona are obviously a big favourite.
Excellent stuff. Well, Nick, it's a pleasure having you on. And, well, we'll look forward to getting you on possibly at some point next season as well, when that all kicks off.
Good stuff. Well, we'll move on then to Player and Cabbage of the Week. Loads to get through, guys, so I'll just get a couple of word answers for you from this. Player of the Week then. Dan, start with you. Who'd it be?
I'm going to go with Anderson. But his performance against Blackpool was really good.
Fair enough. Good stuff. Stop.
Can I give it to David Beckham for his magnificent corner kicks and the Gary Neville testimonial?
Yeah, why not? I'm going to go Ravel Morrison for his two goals that helped the youth team win the Youth Cup. What about Cabbage then? Dov, start with you this time.
Well, I've got two. I've got Dimitar Berbatov for missing about 1,000 chances against Blackpool, or an unnamed Premier League footballer, but I think I'm going to go with the latter. But I can't tell you who it is. I'm not allowed to.
Dan?
Adrian Van der Sar, primarily because he's leaving.
Dovnik Berbatov. So I'm going to go Nani. I didn't think he was that great against Blackpool. Yeah, Nani for me. Right then, well, we'll take a few emails, guys, that we got over last week. We'll start with James McAllister. He just wanted to get your views on the guys that are coming back from loan spells. We've obviously talked at length in the past about Danny Welbeck and Federico Makeda, Tom Cleverley as well. But James also mentions Mami Buran the youth and Richie De Layet. The youth obviously at Blackburn. We had De Layet at Portsmouth at the second half of the season. Do you think they've got any chance of having a future? I mean, James says he knows a Portsmouth supporter that said De Layet's actually done really, really well at Fratton Park. So what's your views on who could potentially make a difference or make an impact next season?
I think the main ones that are coming back, obviously Danny Welbeck and you mentioned Tom Cleverley. I mean, Cleverley's done well with Wigan, and I think he'd expect to play a lot in the pre-season tour. Biram Diouf's done all right at Blackburn when he's played. He's scored a few goals and he's looked okay. The trouble with Makeda, I think that he will be shown the door if we get a decent offer for him. And obviously about De Layet as well. I don't see how he's going to break into the team when you got Raphael and Fabio. I don't know how they're going to break in there.
Fabio, I like it. Our second email's from Andre Bomar. He's talking about social networking sites, Twitter and Facebook, obviously. And the fact that, well, it's been a recent phenomenon, really, in terms of footballers on there. Obviously, United are quite well represented. Like some Rio Ferdinand, Rooney, I think Nani, Valencia, Michael Owen, they're all on there. It mentions about how it can be a disruptive influence. You've probably seen Rooney in the news about it in the last week or so. I think he threatened to put someone to sleep in 10 seconds or something silly like that. And he later backtracked on it, of course. But yeah, Andre says he'd impose a sort of team blanket ban to stop things like that happening. I think Ferguson's come out in the press and suggested, I think he actually said they should do something useful like reading a book rather than being on Twitter. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, Steve, can I get what's our stance on Twitter as the redcafe.net podcast? Are we allowed to go on? Because Dan's recently joined, so I don't know if we should be letting him contone the Twitter behaviour he's been tweeting people about Man United players and his opinions and stuff like that. Do you think he should really keep that as a podcast only thing?
Yeah, I think he might have to get a ban soon if he
For me, I think it's a good thing. Dan's recently discovered the likes of Rio Ferdinand on Twitter. and Nani and that, like you say. And I think it gives the fans a kind of connection, like a direct connection with the players, because maybe say in the 1940s, 50s, 60s, that your favourite player lived in the next street to you, and you seen him on the bus when he was going to the training ground, and it was, there was a bond there between the fans and the players, whereas nowadays you've got players who drive around in blacked out Hummers and Range Rovers and whatever else and really have no contact with the fans whatsoever and live in essentially a completely different world. So I think anything that can maybe bring that connection back, sort of harken back to olden, much better days, is essentially a good thing, as long as it's used in the right way and you don't have people deciding they're going to lay other people out and stuff like that. I think guidelines maybe are probably what's needed, not a blanket ban. I think just basically saying that use it, you can say X, Y, and Z, you're not allowed to mention anything about this, this, and this, and that's what I would do. I don't think a ban is the right way to go at all.
Has Rooney threatened you at all yet, Dan, on this?
No, he's not, no. Why would he threaten me?
No, you, Dan, you'd probably, Dan would probably go to the training ground. He'd be like, right, okay, I'm here, where are you?
Oh, dear. No, I agree with you, Dolph. I remember when I got a tweet from, I got a reply from Giuseppe Rossi, a good couple of months ago now, and that made my year doing that. So I think any sort of interaction with players is all good, as long as they behave themselves, as it were. Final emails from Aaron Holtzclaw. Mentions about the David De Gea signing, and he thinks it's a really good signing, in fact, and there's been a lot of talk that he's maybe not got the experience at the age of 20. But he thinks the fact that he is so young, that there's plenty of years from him, effectively, and it provides stability. He also talks about, obviously, watching the final. I believe he's based in the United States, and he says that on the day of the final, he's actually helping a scouse friend of his move house. He said he's definitely going to break away and go to the pub in the middle of the day to watch the game. So credit to him for that. He backs us to win the Champions League as well, of course. And he also wants us to give him a mini shout-out for his friend, Ryan, the Scouse. And he wants us to say Liverpool sucks. So there you go, Aaron. That's done for you. He's also looking forward to the podcast returning again next season. So thanks for the email there, and to the other guys that got in touch. The address is podcast@redcafe.net if you do want to get in touch with any sort of questions, comments. Probably be the last show of the season next week, so we'll look to review the last sort of 8 to 9 months of action. So if you've got any questions or comments with regards to that, then do get in touch.
You're listening to the redcafe.net podcast. You can email us at podcast@redcafe.net, or alternatively post your opinion on the redcafe.net forums.
So everybody, you might have heard this weekend there's a cup game. It's the Champions League final, Manchester United against Barcelona, and I'm delighted to welcome a Manchester United fan who's a journalist based in Barcelona. He has a Barcelona website, which is barcelonafans.org, and he's also written a book about Barcelona called A Catalan Dream, which is kind of about Barcelona over the last 10 years. So his name's Tim Hanlon. Tim, welcome to the redcafe.net podcast.
Thanks very much. Good to be here. As you say, it's going to be interesting few days leading up to the game, and I'll have to see how it goes on Saturday. Chance for United to get their revenge a couple of years ago.
Indeed. And being that you're based in Barcelona, we should maybe get your thoughts, or maybe just tell us what the kind of feeling is in the Spanish city, and what their kind of sort of papers and things like that are saying about the game.
They're quite confident. It's a different situation to 2 years ago, where United went in as the champions, having won in 2008. But whereas Barca, were coming along and challenging, and this time round, Barca are supposedly the top side in Europe. They've done really well this season. Won the league again in Spain against a good Real Madrid side as well, with Mourinho there. And, so it's. Yeah, the mood here is that it's there for Barca to win, and that although United have won the league in England, they're they've got a steady team rather than something, you know, rather than a special side, like, you know, with top players.
And what about, obviously, this is the second time the teams have met in the final over the last few years. What was the kind of mood like in 2009? Because obviously you were still in Barcelona then as well. Mm. Like, what are the differences?
Well, I think that they weren't as confident. I mean, the thing is that people here see some English, yeah, Premiership football, but they don't see it all the time. And United being in the final the year before, you know, they knew all about Ronaldo and Giggs and so on. They knew that United were a big side, and that, but they didn't really know how good this Barcelona side was. But as it turned out, in the final, Barcelona won relatively easily after the first 10 minutes, and so I think based on that, they're now quite confident. They've quite a lot of belief in the team, and the thing is, they got Messi in the side, and basically Messi's just almost single-handedly knocks over all the sides that Barcelona have come up against, so you can see why they're confident.
Obviously, you have seen quite a lot of Barcelona, I'll assume, this season.
Yeah.
What about weaknesses, Tim? Is there anywhere where maybe we should target to try and get that victory that we all want?
Yeah, well, I mean, initially you look at... you think of Barcelona and how you beat them, it's almost like an impossible task. But if you kind of examine it a bit more, then there are weaknesses. And for a start, I mean, if you look at the defence, going from the keeper forwards, I mean, defence is rarely really, you know, put under that much pressure. Barca usually turn up for the games in La Liga, and they're rarely, you know, really challenged. They play them, you know, Real Madrid, but against your normal teams like your Racing Santander and Almeria, these kind of teams, the defence is hardly putting on any pressure whatsoever. And I think in the big European matches, if you kind of run at the defence, the teams have had success, and I think that you can expose Piqué. He's not the most agile of defenders. He's great coming forward with the ball, but it's not the most agile. Dani Alves is great going forward, but he's not a brilliant defender. So I think that's the weakness, is the defence. And particularly ahead of this game, they've got a few issues over who's going to play. A few doubts there at the back. Whether Abidal's going to be able to play at left back after his illness, his problems with a tumour. And there's a possibility that Mascherano could play in the centre and Puyol on the left, which I think would give United quite a good chance, really.
How would you go about negating Sergio Busquets? I mean, would you play Jisung Park to do that job, or would you put him out wide and let Rooney sit a bit deeper and sort of, you know, stop him from dictating play?
Well, the thing is, I think Busquets plays, you know, he's the first player who picks up the ball in midfield. But I mean, I think the real dangers are Xavi and Iniesta. But I think, I mean, of those three players as a group, I personally would like to see Park in the middle there and kind of scurrying around and just sort of getting in the way, you know, getting the ball off those players. And I think that's the best way to deal with them. You have more like physically robust players who play against them, and they can outpass them. They can sort of knock the ball around them. That's the best thing about their play. I mean, they're very skilled at doing that. So a player like Parra could get amongst them and nip the ball off them, and they could get frustrated if that happens. So I'd like to see him in the middle, possibly with another slightly more attacking lineup with Giggs in the middle there as well. Or people have talked about Carrick, but I'd like quite to see Giggs playing there, and Nani and Valencia playing as well on the wings.
Now, Tim, much has been made sort of about the fact, well, in inverted commas, we're at home, with it being at Wembley. Guardiola, I think, in a press conference, talked about it maybe being an advantage for us. I mean, do you see that at all coming into play?
Yeah, I think it's an advantage, particularly as Barcelona's preparation for the match has been badly disturbed with the with the ash coming from the volcano in Iceland. Basically, they've had to come over a few days early. They came over on Tuesday. Everyone talks about, how when players are stuck in a hotel for a few days before a match, that it's not the ideal preparation by any means. And Guardiola likes to organise everything completely, down to the finest detail. And so all those kind of plans will probably have gone up in the air to an extent. So I think it works in United's favour. They'll just be able to go travel down a couple of hours, and they'll be there and in a lot more kind of relaxed mood, I'd imagine. Plus, I don't know. I mean, how many Barca fans are going to be able to come? But it looks like there's not going to be any trouble, in fact, with the aeroplane. So they should be able to come over without any problems in the end. They're talking about something like 24,000-25,000 Barca fans coming over for the match.
Dan, Tim's talked there about the fact he would play gigs in the middle. You'd go with Carrick, wouldn't you?
Yeah, well, no, I just think that he obviously brings a bit of experience to the team. He's been there and he's done it, and he'll be wanting to replay the 2009 game, really, because he was poor in that game. I think he was one of the players that gave the ball away a lot in that game, and when Barcelona dominated in the middle. But I think this time he's in really good form for the last few months. He was an essential part of the team that helped beat Chelsea over two legs, and obviously he played in the first leg over in Schalke as well, and I think that he deserves his place in the final. I think he's been a really good player for us. I know he's very much one of them players that divides opinion throughout supporters and the press as well. But I do rate him, and I think that he brings a certain stability to the team. And I think it'll also be important, Barcelona, I think we've recognised that they will have a lot of the ball. When United get the ball back, say if Ferdinand nicks it or Vidic nicks it or any of the full-backs, Carrick has to be the one that's available all the time. And then he can utilise his passing range, and me and Duff were talking off air about, the fact that the Wembley pitch can sometimes be a bit slow and maybe the ball hold a little bit. It's really better, really, apart from Paul Scholes, who could, dictate the passing when we do get the ball. I understand what you say about the fact that off the ball his movement's maybe not as good, and he's not as maybe not as agile and as sharp as players like Iniesta and Xavi, but let's be honest, there's not many players in the world that are. So with Giggs alongside him, maybe sitting a little bit deeper, experience again will help break up the play, and then play Rooney centrally and play Park and Valencia on the wings.
I just hope we do get the ball enough for Carrick to be effective, because I know it's different, it's going to be a different atmosphere and they're not at home, but Barcelona against Arsenal, you'd probably say someone like Fabregas is good enough to be able to get into a game, and he just couldn't get near the ball. They were just dominated possession so much that, they just rang rings around them, really, and I'm hoping the same sort of thing doesn't happen here, because Carrick is a waste, really. If you can't give him the ball and he can't dictate play, then there's no real point in having him in there. Just hope that scenario doesn't happen.
Yeah, I think the main problem really is that United's probably weakest area is the midfield, whereas it's Barca's strongest area. And so if you look at the best way to deal with that, then you think, for most matches, I'd agree. You have a player like Carrick and he's a good passer of the ball. And against a lot of teams, you'd be able to dictate play and pass the ball around and set up chances from midfield. But the thing is, against Barca, against Iniesta and Xavi, is he going to be able to sort of dictate the game to them? And I can't see it happening, really. And I think if that did happen, then they would just run rings around him, unfortunately. If he was a Snyder, a player like that who's got more movement as well, I think he could hold his own. But I just don't think Carrick would. And so I think you've got to look at a different way of structure in the midfield to outdo Barca rather than trying to play them at that kind of intricate passing.
I think one of the other parts of the midfield is who plays on both wings. I mean, we've spoke about it before, is you're going to probably have Valencia on the right side, and whether or not you have, I think Tim and Steve, you would rather have Nani on the left side as an attacking threat, whereas like Dan, he's going more along the lines of Park. And to be honest, I would be tempted to maybe go more with Dan on this one, have Park there to try and sort of negate the threat of Dani Alves when he does break forward, because he pretty much spends his whole time in the opposition half. And I think Park would do that defensive work, and then because of the energy he has, he's got he could then get forward and try and then get behind Dani Alves, whereas I don't think Nani, all right, he might do it for a little bit, but I think he's more likely to kind of switch off and not perform those defensive duties.
Yeah, I just think the Nani, the surprise factor, the fact he can, he's capable of something that maybe some of the other players aren't. Like, he's got the trickery, he can get at Dani Alves, who we all know can struggle defensively. It just gives you an outlet, and I don't agree with people that say Nani can't defend at all, because I think in a big game like that, he won't shirk the defensive duties. He knows what he's got to do. He knows he has to get back and help Evra, because otherwise he's going to struggle against Messi and Pedro, who predominantly pop up on that right outside. So I think he'd be okay defensively. I don't think there'd be any major fault of his for not tracking back if Barcelona were to score. And going forward, we all know what Nani's capable of. And given the chance at that sort of big stage at Wembley in front of the massive crowd, I just think he'd relish it, and I think he'd be a good player to have out there. And I agree with Tim that I'd push Park just inside, and just because of his energy, and he'll get about Xavi and Iniesta to try and disrupt them, and I think that would work really well. So, but then you've got the dilemma of having to drop Giggs, or drop Carrick, and drop Anderson. It's so tough. I'm glad I'm not Ferguson, to be honest. It's a really difficult choice, and he's going to have to obviously let a few of them down. But he usually makes the right decisions.
Steve, the only thing I've got a concern, you know, if you say we're starting Nani, you know, and I agree, he can do the defensive job. I think he's willing to do it. I think he's not like Ronaldo, who didn't really bother with it. I think Nani shows a good commitment to the team. The only thing is, I mean, if Nani gets the ball, say, I don't know, 18, 20 yards away from his own area, do you think he's the person you'd want on the ball in that situation, you know, where he's more likely to try step over and beat somebody and get the ball nicked off him? You know, whereas Park will probably look to run with the ball a bit more, sort of about the flicks and tricks, or maybe just look to play it simply to someone near him, rather than do, like I said, Nani be a bit more flair based. I'm just wondering whether that could be an issue.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think that Nani, like you were saying yourself, is somebody who can do something special, and realistically against Barca, you're going to need somebody who can do something like that, who can maybe create a chance out of nothing, you know, break from midfield and do something, whereas Park is more reliable kind of play. But is he going to actually, in terms of percentage chances, I mean, I think if United are going to go on to win the game, they need, it would be better to have a player like Nani there who can actually just maybe do something completely unexpected.
I think that Nani would be good to bring on, though, say 20 minutes to go if we're chasing the game. You know, like you say, that's something unexpected. If we're 1-0 down, it could be the key to winning it, rather than playing him the whole game. Because, like, you know, we mentioned that Barcelona have a lot of the ball, and it's up to United then to do something special. Nani's set pieces could be quite vital, though, if he does play, because he's pretty... I mean, he does score a few free kicks, doesn't he? And he takes a lot of the corners. And I think that's one area where it's not really been discussed, because obviously Barcelona aren't the tallest team. They've only got Piqué sort of 6+. And you've got Busquets is quite tall, isn't he? But I think the rest of that team, even Puyol's doesn't appear to be.
No, he's about 5'10", yeah.
Yeah, so I think that there could be some scope for
taking advantage of the air.
If you get corners, you'll have people, you know, Ferdinand, Vidic, who are dominant in the air, and you know, Carrick's quite a tall player if he plays, and I think that, you know, it could be you know, worth a try.
Yeah, certainly crosses coming in from the wings will be something they don't like at all, or corners and so on. They've often been exposed in those kind of situations. But I think it's going to be important to attack, because if they do go a goal down, then it's going to be very difficult against Barca, because the way they play and keep hold of the ball is very, very difficult. Like, I think the key really is to go at them from the start and just, you know, hope they might be a little bit nervous to begin with, I don't know, but similar kind of start to what happened in Rome, and then just try and build on that, though, and maybe get a goal.
One of the areas I think is key, or one of the places actually more it's up for grabs, is the right-back slot. Obviously, you've had Rafael, who's been pretty much the first-choice right-back all season. Fabio's kind of moved in there in the last sort of month or so, and then you've got John O'Shea, and, well, he's John O'Shea, the greatest player that ever lived. Well, Tim, I'm going to ask you this. With David Villa, he's likely to play on that left-hand side, cutting in. And I know in training this week, they had Michael Owen pretending to be David Villa, doing, sort of cutting him from the left. Who would be your choice as a player to play there. Obviously, you've got, for me, I would have John O'Shea there. He's a bit more steady, a bit more consistent, and he's quite strong on his left side, which is something that you can have, say, with Fabio, but not so much Raphael. So what would be your take on that?
It's like the one position I'm really kind of a little bit undecided on, because it's a really tricky one. Whether you go for like the most solid option, or you know, somebody who's a little bit less reliable, but you could offer something more in attack. But I'm kind of, after a bit of thought, I'm thinking O'Shea's probably better in terms of his reliability at the back, and because Fabio and Raphael have, at times they've looked a bit of a liability, and if you're looking at the quality of the Barca attack, you can't really afford to have those kind of players up against not defenders who aren't very very reliable, and someone like O'Shea's probably got the advantage in that sense. And I mean, the big advantage as well is that up until now, in the last few months, Villa hasn't been playing that well, so don't want to tempt fate, but that could also be on United's side.
Should we get some predictions now then, on how we see it going? Tim, do you think we'll pull it off on Saturday?
it's going to be a tricky one, but I've got faith, and if you initially look at the game, you think it's going to be very very tough. And how are United going to do it? But I think they can surprise Barca. I'd say they're going to go into the match as the underdog, so they can only really win and in that situation. So I'm going to go for a 2-1.
Dan, how's it going?
I think that it'll go all the way. I think it'll go to extra time. I think it'll be 1-1. And I think we'll score first, and I think that Barca will equalise in sort of the 8th to 9th minute or something. Take it to extra time, and then I think we'll win.
Like it. Confident.
Dov,
how do you see it?
I think 2-1 as well. I think it'll be 2-1 as well. I think it's going to be a really, really tight game. You've got both sides, have got an array of attacking talent, and I think there's defensive fairies that can be exploited on both sides. So, 2-1, but only in 90 minutes, though.
I'm going to be pessimistic. I'm always pessimistic. I just worry about how we deal with sort of Barca dominating possession. I just hope sort of Ferguson can find a way to counteract that. So with that in mind, obviously I'm not gonna say United are gonna lose, I couldn't do that. So we'll say 1-1. It's gonna go all the way to penalties, and then hopefully we'll nick it on penalties. Chicharito knocking in the winner. So, there we go.
So yeah, well, that's the our little short Champions League final preview. Tim, it's been a pleasure having you on the show.
Thanks very much, it's been a pleasure to be on.
And if anybody likes it, wants to check out Tim's website, it's barcelonafans.org, and also remember the book A Catalan Dream as well. But I'll put links on there for you so you can get there quickly and easily and don't have to faff around on Google or anything like that.
All right then, well, that is just about the end of episode 83 of the redcafe.net podcast. Remember, there's the usual email address, which is podcast@redcafe.net, if you want to get in touch ahead of next week's final show of the season. There's also the Facebook group, and you can get hold of Dan on Twitter now as well, so I'd urge you to do that if you haven't already. And it just leaves us to say thanks a lot for listening as always, and hopefully we'll be celebrating a Champions League win in next week's show.